Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, bringing you Christmas shows from radio's golden age. I'm Mark Levonier. Later in this hour, a Christmas story from January of 1948. It's the mayor of the town. But right now, it's yours truly, Johnny Dollar, with one of very few Christmas-themed episodes from their first season on the air from Christmas Eve 1949 on CBS. The story, Small-Time Swindlers of Big-Time Department Stores.
It was a week before Christmas, and all through the house, a creature was stirring. And boy, what a rat.
This is another in the adventures of America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator, Johnny Dollar, starring Charles Russell. At insurance investigation, Johnny Dollar is only an expert. At making out his expense account, he's an absolute genius.
Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to Home Office, Industrial Insurers Incorporated, Hartford, Connecticut. Attention, Mr. Eben Stevens, General Manager. The following is an accounting of my expenditures during investigation of small-time swindles of big-time department stores. Or how I played Santa Claus and almost got left holding the sack. Or going for a sleigh ride without benefit of snow can be tough sledding. Expense account, item one. $1, tip to messenger who delivered this assignment writing by hand to my apartment.
Thanks, Mr. Dollar.
You have never been known as a fast man with a buck, Mr. Stevens, and I must say your note to me also marked you in my mind as an economist with words.
Dear Dollar, our client, the Association of Department Stores of Greater Manhattan, has requested help on the following problem. A young man has been making the rounds of New York department stores during the current Christmas rush. Using his equipment and official-looking sales book, he goes to a business department, makes a quick sale on some large item, writes it up in his spurious sales book, takes the customer's cash, and disappears. Enclosed find varying descriptions, as furnished by victims to date, and check for your usual retainer fee. Please put a stop to this nefarious practice at once. Signed, Eben Stevens, General Manager.
Expense account, item two, $6.21. Train fare, Hartford to New York. Next morning at 7:03 on the Banker's Special. A train very cleverly named that because 75% of its load is made up of bankers. I sat among them in a parlor car, watching them limbering up for the day's chores, slowly shaking their heads from side to side and softly whispering, no. We arrived at Grand Central at 9:20. The bankers got off and headed for their granite vaults. I got off and headed to face my stone wall. Expense account, item three, $4, cab fare to offices of the Association of Department Stores of Greater Manhattan. There, things got brighter right away. Her name was Judy Whitehall. Boy, how she'd been missed by the scouts for the Copacabana, I'll never know.
I have been assigned to help you all I can, Mr. Dollar. What would you like to know first?
Your home phone number. Oh, well, maybe we better wait until later for that. How many stores are there in your association, Miss Whitehall?
We have 120 member stores, Mr. Dollar.
Great. You know, in one department store, I'm the kind of a guy that can't find the glove department. And now I've got 120 stores in which to find someone I don't even know.
Well, we do have the man's description.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, we have a lot of descriptions, all slightly different.
And the regular store detectives are all on the lookout. Yeah,
it's like looking for a noodle in a spaghetti stack.
And all the sales personnel have been warned.
It's beautiful.
What's beautiful?
Your face.
Well, really, Mr. Dollar.
Hmm?
After all.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes, I know. Business. Well, before I start, maybe you'd better give me a letter of identification. If I spend all day moseying around department stores without buying anything, I can stand a good chance of getting picked up as a shoplifter.
Well, right away. Follow me.
All right.
Oh, just a minute. Hello, this is Miss Whitehall. Oh, yes, Mrs. Sandler. Oh, my, that's terrible. My goodness, that's awful. Good gracious, that's worse. Well, the insurance investigator is here right now, Mrs. Sanders. We'll be right over.
What's so terrible?
Well, that man, the one we're looking for, he was in the Miller's store making a phony sale in the camera department.
Oh, you also said it was awful.
It was. A little girl picked up a camera and snapped his picture, and the man tried to take it away from her, and the girl yelled, and then her mother screamed.
And what made it worse?
Well, a store detective came running, and the man shot him. Then he grabbed the little girl, camera and all, and ran off. They called the police.
Really? I can't imagine why. The mob scene in the Miller store would have made the Notre Dame backfield holler uncle. Christmas neckties were selling like hotcakes. Only compared to most of the ties, a hotcake would look better on you. The camera department was on the mezzanine, and the store manager, Mr. Sander, was on a rampage.
Why doesn't somebody do something? Why can't they find him? I've got men posted on every door. He's in this store somewhere, and... Oh, Miss Whitehall, it's about time. Who's this?
Oh, this is Mr. Dollar, Mr. Sandler, from the insurance company.
Well, I don't know what you can do, Dollar. I've already got 20 policemen running all over the store. It's absolutely ridiculous, preposterous, and fantastic. That's what it is.
Also amazing. Now, tell me, Mr. Sandler, about that little girl who picked up the camera and snapped the culprit's picture. Did they find her yet?
They certainly did, in the rug department. She'd been shoved in the middle of a pile of 9x12 Orientals on sale at $123.50. She was scared, but not hurt.
Now, the girl was found without the camera, I suppose.
Oh, naturally, but the camera wouldn't do us any good. After all, I'm sure the camera didn't have any film in it. They never do when they're on display.
Well, how about the store detective, the one who got shot?
In the hospital, Miss Hall. They'll call me here as soon as they find out how badly he's been hurt.
Well, look, getting back to that kid, was she able to give you a good description of the guy who grabbed her?
She hasn't stopped crying long enough.
Well, how about her mother?
Neither is she.
Well, where are they now?
They're in my office. That's why I'm staying right here.
Where is your office?
On the 8th floor, right next to the credit office.
Well, this may be the first time I ever got past the credit office. Come on, Judy.
Oh, Bobby, come on. Blow your nose. There. Now be a brave little girl.
I don't want it. He hit me. He tried to kill me. Oh. He took away my camera.
Let me have another try, Mrs. Jenkins.
All right, Mr. Dollar, if you think it'll do any good.
All right. Come on now, Bobby. All you have to do is tell us what that bad man looked like. We'll get him, and then we'll fix it. Come on now, huh?
I don't want to. He'll kill me.
I'm beginning to think he's got a point. Okay, Bobby. Okay, okay. Just a minute now. Oh, Judy. Here.
Yes, Johnny?
Looks like it's a child psychologist. I'm nothing. At this point, I feel like telling little Bobby to go out and play with some old razor blades. Got any suggestions?
Well, it is almost Christmas.
Yeah?
And one thing little girls don't want to do at Christmas is get in wrong with Santa Claus.
Ah, gotcha. Good gal. Where do we find Santa Claus?
In the toy department on the 5th floor.
Well, give me about 5 minutes to explain things to Santa and then bring Bobby down.
All right.
Oh, Bobby.
What?
Do you know what happens to little girls who make Santa Claus mad at them?
Yes.
What happens?
They don't get to look at television before they go to bed.
I mean, at Christmas, what happens?
They don't get any toys. All they get is old sweaters and underwear.
Well, listen, Bobby. This guy Santa happens to be a good friend of mine. What do you think of that?
Tell him I want an air rifle.
You would. Okay. I'll even fix it so you can tell him yourself. How's that?
Just fine.
Ah, good girl. Hey, where'd you get that blood on your coat? You got a cut?
No, sir. That's from that bad man. I bit him on the hand.
Okay, Judy. Here I go. Oh, and on the way down, maybe you better stop by the dog supply department and buy little Bobby a muzzle. If the kid doesn't like his looks, old Saint Nick may get nicked. Department stores should have some kind of a congressional medal for salespeople who work in the toy department just before Christmas. I took the elevator down to 5, and when that door slid open...
Toy department. Let him out, please.
It was like stepping into Dante's Inferno, junior grade. First, I got on a house phone and called Sandler, who was still in the camera department. He'd had word from the hospital. The store detective had died without regaining consciousness. I was no longer trying to catch a cheap swindler. I was now out to swap blood with a dirty murderer. A line of fidgety kids led me to Santa Claus, sitting benignly on his throne. I had a short talk with him, and a short wait for Judy and little Bobby. Okay, Santa. Now, we've got to make her talk. That is, you've got to.
All right, Dollar. All right now, kiddies. You'll have to wait for a moment. We have a special little visitor coming to see me.
Hello, Johnny. All set?
Yeah, all set. Okay, Bobby, my girl. Now, just let me give you a hoist up into Santa's lap. He wants to ask you a few questions.
I want an air rifle.
Now, you'll be a good little girl and answer all Santa's nice questions, and you'll get it. But not where I'd like to give it to you. Up you go.
Yes. Well, there we are, honey. Now, tell me, what do you want for Christmas?
I want an air rifle.
Well, we'll see what we can do about that. Tell me, have you been a good little girl?
Yes, sir.
Well, first we'll just have to look up your name in my little black book and make sure. Pretty good. All but one little thing.
What'd I do? I didn't do nothing.
Well, that's just it. You see, Bobby, I have a note here that today some people asked you what a certain man looked like and you wouldn't tell them. Is that right?
I'm afraid. I don't want to tell. They can't make me.
Well, Bobby, maybe you and I had better talk this over. If you won't do something for us, now, how do you expect it to happen?
Little Bobby's description of the murderer wasn't the greatest by any means, but it was better than none at all, with which we had been furnished by the personnel in the camera department and the kid's mother. We took the girl to the advertising department, where an artist made a sketch. Armed with a drawing, we made a tour of the store exits, showing it to the police posted on every door, giving them a rough idea what to look for. A medium-billed, pudgy man with black hair. And when they came across such a character, he was to be issued an invitation to show his hands. If he was sporting Bobby's teeth marks, then they'd really know. Well, this chore out of the way, Miss Whitehall and I sank our teeth in a pair of sandwiches in the tea room. The Shopper's Delight sandwich, to be exact. Cream cheese, walnuts, watercress, and pineapple on whole wheat bread. We found the store manager, Sandler, back in his office. He, too, was eating, but he was on a diet of straight fingernails.
Oh, terrible, terrible, terrible. That's what it is.
Now, don't worry, Mr. Sandler. He'll be caught. As a swindler, he might have gone on for years. But as a murderer, it won't be long, believe me.
Oh, what to do, what to do, what to do?
Well, I've got several ideas. And the first is to get out of your office and start at the top of the store and work my way down.
They're already doing that, and not a sign of him.
Well, I once found a mouse in a hayloft, so be not disencouraged. And a pretty little mouse she was.
Oh, dear, oh, dear.
Oh, please, try to relax, Mr. Sandler. Everybody's doing their best.
Yes, I'm sure they are. It's just that I... Oh. Hello? Yes, it's Mr. Sandler. Oh, no. Where? How long has he been there? Hello? I'll be right down.
What's the matter now?
About an hour and a half ago, our store Santa Claus stepped out into the employee's restroom for a smoke. He was slugged from behind. When he came to, he was all tied up in a broom closet, and somebody has stolen his Santa Claus suit. They just found him.
About an hour and a half ago. Judy, you know what that means?
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. 45 minutes ago, when little Bobby was giving Santa Claus the murderer's description, he was giving it to the murderer himself.
Oh, good gracious.
Instead of a kid's air rifle, it could have gotten us a revolver, size 38. I headed back to the toy department, but when I got there, the cupboard was bare. Our lethal Saint Nick had decided to give up his red flannel and white whisker hiding place. We found the empty suit in a storeroom, tossed high on a stack of baby buggies.
Oh, Johnny, this is terrible. That man's a murderer. What are you going to do?
What am I going to do? Now, listen, Judy. By now, there must be 87 cops sifting through this store looking for that guy. They've got two cops on every door. Now, all I'm going to do is help them look. This is one of those everybody's problems.
You're right. I guess I'm just getting excited.
Well, that you have a right to do. Come on, let's get out of here. I've got an idea.
All right, Johnny. I'll
oh, go. Mr. Dollars, thank goodness I found you. Mrs. Sandler wants you right away down on three. An old lady has just been shot in Junior Mrs. Lingerie.
Oh, serves her right for not acting her age. Let's go, Judy.
Oh,
Right over here, Dollar.
All right.
Let him through, please. Let him... Lady, please stand back now. Well, Dollar,
yeah.
Congratulations. Before, this store was only going to sue that company of yours for $1 million. Considering what this shooting will do to our reputation, I'm going to make that $5
million. Mr. Sandler, keep your powder dry. First of all, it's not my company. And second, you can't sue them for something they didn't do. And third, you'd better get this poor old gal to a hospital. How badly is she hurt, and how did it happen?
The doctor's on his way, and we've sent for an ambulance. This woman was lost out on the back stairway looking for the ladies' room. That maniac saw her coming toward him and ran down the stairs firing over his shoulder. The bullet just seemed to have grazed her left side.
Pretty lucky. Where are the police?
They're searching all over the store. Dollar, what are we going to do? This is terrible for business.
Well, I suspect that any minute now the cops will be telling you to do something that's going to be even worse for business. Close the store.
Well, close the store?
Yeah.
Why, we're staying open late tonight. It's the last minute rush.
I'm just telling you what I think. I think the cops will double the lookouts on all the doors and make you close the store. Then they can go to work.
We lose thousands of dollars. They can't make me close the store.
If you stay open, you might lose a few more customers. The hard way. Where's that doctor?
He'll be here any minute.
Oh, Mr. Sam.
Well, yes, what is it?
Well, they called up from the sporting goods in the basement. That man has been down there and held them up. And he took four guns and six boxes of ammunition.
Six boxes of... Oh, my. Oh, what's this going to do to our store?
If you're not careful, it's going to turn your store into the world's largest shooting gallery with live targets. You know what I suggest, Mr. Sandler?
What? Tell me what.
Don't wait for the police to tell you. Close the store. Sandler didn't like it, and neither did the customers, as they filed out of the store past the scrutiny of the police officers, still clutching their unfinished Christmas shopping lists. The process was slow, and while the customers were leaving, the clerks finished up their business, put the white shrouds over their counters, and they too filed out into the early night. The boys in blue, watching the doors, came up with several men answering the general description of our friend with a loose trigger finger, but none of them had little Bobby's teeth marks on his hands. That made it a 50-50 chance that Mr. Killer was still in the building. There's nothing more eerie than a department store after closing. And its white sheets, the whole joint seemed to be playing ghost. I sent Judy over to a steakhouse, Pietre's, on 3rd Avenue, told her to wait. Then I had Sandler get me a gun from the sporting goods department. For that lonely, scared feeling, there's no medicine that quite takes the place of a piece of cool steel in your little hot hand. The sergeant, in charge of the police detail, posted men outside all exits. The rest he took up to the roof with him. They were going to run the whole store through their burly blue sieve, floor by floor, counter by counter, inch by inch. Sandler stayed with me down the first floor. Just for fun, I thought I would start working my way up.
Dollar, don't you think we should get out of here and leave this to the police?
Well, I have several goosebumps that agree with you, Mr. Sandler, but I have a very dangerous habit of trying to earn my money.
Oh, this is terrible.
Now, look, every counter and post in this store is just the kind of hiding place a sniper would pray for. I get paid for this kind of work. You don't. Now, why don't you go out for a nice safe walk?
It's my duty to stay here. I'm sticking with you.
Okay. But remember, two of us gave him twice as much to shoot at. I had to go and open my big mouth. Get down. Getting down on that floor could have been committing suicide in itself. The killer's bullet had crashed into a showcase, and a sea of broken glass is a risky place to practice diving. Having to swim out of it was twice as bad, but that's what I had to do.
Oh, Mr. Dollar.
Now, Sandler, keep your head down. Bury your face in the glass, but keep your head down.
Yes, Dollar. Tell me what to do, anything, but get me out of here. I have a wife and three kids.
Well, if you'll do what I tell you to do, your wife will go on having a husband and your kids will still have a father.
Yes, yes, just tell me.
I don't know exactly where that shot came from, but from the looks of this glass, it must have been from behind us. Now, I'm going to leave you and crawl over near those elevators. While I'm on my way, you rattle around in this glass. Let them hear where you are. Give me about 2 minutes, and then do something to draw his fire.
What'll I do?
Do anything but one thing. Don't stand up.
I'll think of something.
You'd better. But don't take any chances.
No. But what are you going to do?
Take some chances. Once I was on my way, Sandler went to work with a vengeance. I could hear him thrashing around in that glass like he was trying to corner the Band-Aid market. I made it over to the elevators, scooting flat along the floor till I hit a car with an open door and slithered inside. Behind the protection of the elevator's front wall, I stood up, peered over at the edge of the door, and waited for Sandler to make the move that would draw the murderer's fire. I must say Sandler was dead game, and the way he made his move, he also stood a good chance of becoming plain dead. First, he stopped wiggling around on his bed of glass, and then he just stood straight up. The shot missed, but my eyesight didn't. The killer was shooting from high up, behind a pole. He was standing up on a glass showcase, hoping for a better view. And it didn't take me long to decide to give him a better view of the inside of that glass showcase. I started deliberately shooting his foothold out from under him. He was bleeding beautifully when he started to run, straight for the back of the store, firing as he ran. As one last souvenir, he threw his empty gun over his shoulder at me. People who live in glass houses shouldn't throw guns. I decided to join the track team and went on the chase. Back out of the main floor, through the employee's entrance, out to the dimly lit shipping department, and its loading dock filled with packages ready for shipment. I could hear him moving around among them. Okay, get your hands up and come out. I'm giving you a chance, but it's not going to last long. Get moving.
I don't need your chance. I've got something better.
Okay, so you want to play. I think I'll give you a couple of Yuletide presents early, and I'm sure nobody will mind if I open your head before Christmas. My hot-headed friend was hiding behind a high pile of wooden boxes ready for shipping. I grabbed a heavy, empty dolly, gave it a flying start, sent it crashing into the bottom box of the pile. It was beautiful. The biggest crash since 29. It was a tough fight, but Mom, I don't think I won. At best, it was a draw. About the 15th time I belted him, he belted me right back. Then he got his hands on a hammer, laid it across the side of my head. I got the hammer, did the same for him, and made a hole in one. He fell squarely into a man-sized packing case lying at the foot of the packing bench. I was getting weak, dizzy. I had to hold him. One thing to do, top a case lying right there, already nails part way in. Put it on right over him. Nail it on. Good, tight. Good, tight. Good, tight. Everything is going black. Then everything went white. Hey, corny as this may sound, where am I?
You're in the hospital, Johnny, darling.
Hmm?
But don't worry. It's only a slight concussion. They brought you here last night.
Oh, I suppose I have a hammer-shaped hole in my head.
No, darling. It hardly shows.
How could it with these bandages covering it up? Well, at least I got him.
Hmm? You what, dear?
I got him. The killer.
Oh, no, dear. You couldn't have. They're still looking for him.
Oh, no. Oh, my gosh. What time is it?
11 in the morning.
I've got to get out of here.
Why? Johnny, please. Johnny, you're not supposed to get up. Oh, nurse!
If they let him get away after all my trouble, somebody was going to need a doctor. Judy and I hit the department store in 12 minutes flat. 1 minute later, I was in the shipping department talking to the head man.
Now, Mr. Dollar, just calm down. Everything's going to be all right. Now, exactly what is it you want to know?
That big packing case, the one that was lying right here in front of the bench last night. Where is it?
Oh, the great big one?
Yes, the great big one.
The one about 8 feet long and 3 feet wide?
Yes, the one about 8 feet long and 3 feet wide.
Well, there was something very peculiar about that case.
You're telling me. Where is it?
Well, this morning we came to work. The boys saw it all packed up, so they put it on the truck for upper New York State.
Oh, no.
Oh, indeed they did. But what was peculiar about it, even though they found it all ready to go... Later on, they found all the merchandise that was supposed to go in it lying around loose. It had never really been packed.
Well, then quick. The least you can do is tell me where it went.
Well, now that I can do. That box was the boss's big annual charity shipment of goods. That particular box is on its way to some of the unfortunates who'll be spending this Christmas away from home.
All right, so where is it?
By now, it should be at the New York State Prison, up in Ossining.
Expense account, item 5, $12.80. Dinner check at Pietro's, where I had asked Miss Judy Whitehall to wait for me the night before, and where I inadvertently stood her up. Although how a gal can stand up after eating $12.80 worth of food, more than I can figure out. Expense account, item 6, $10. Medical supplies for those poor CBS sound men, Burn Surrey and Billy Gould, who had to break all that glass during the show. Expense account total, $511.50. You may think this amount is a little high, but isn't everybody at this time of the year? Signed, yours, truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 24th of December, 1949 on CBS. It's an hour of Christmas shows on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm Mark LeVonier. We move on now with the mayor of the town from January 21st, 1948, an ABC broadcast, the last circulating show of the series, which would go off the air about a year and a half later in the summer of 1949.
Now, the mayor of the town, starring Lionel Barrymore. Well, it's an early January evening in Springdale, and supper is over at the old-fashioned house on Elm Street. The mayor is sitting in front of the study fire, half-dozing over the evening clarion. His ward, Butch, is lying on the couch, an unopened history book on his stomach, and idly drawing pictures on the frosted windowpane with his thumbnail. Marilla comes in from the kitchen.
Well, I finally got them finished. Dishes. Honestly, for three civilized people, there's Roscoe.
Yeah, Marilla?
What are you doing?
Nothing.
Well, stop it.
Yes, sir.
You can do more damage doing nothing than 20 other folks doing something. As soon as that frost melts, the whole window pane will be covered with marks.
Oh, doggone it,
Mercy.
Marilla. Will you please sit down and relax?
I am relaxed.
Well, relax all over. I am right in the middle of January, doldrums. I'm in no mood.
My soak was because... Do I believe in what?
Thought transference.
Thought? You mean thinking something real hard until the someone you're thinking at gets what you're thinking about? Is that the...
That's it in a king-size coconut shell. Yep.
Well, yes, I believe in it. Why?
Well, as an interesting experiment in peace and quiet, let's all sit just here and think at each other for the rest of the evening.
Well, people can't be terrible sociable just by looking.
No. No words, just silent, restful thoughts.
There's just no sense in it.
Thank you.
What?
Huh? I said thank you. I knew you'd cooperate, so I just said thank you.
Oh. Don't mention it.
Well, all right, thanks.
Of course, I can take a hint, you know. If people don't want to talk, I can be as close-mouthed as anybody else.
Mm.
And I love to think. It gives a person something to occupy their mind. I could sit right here till 2 weeks after doomsday without a single word passing my lips. Even as a baby, I didn't try to talk until I was nearly 3 months old, you know. My mother was terrible, afraid I'd never... Roscoe Gardiner, aren't you ashamed of yourself?
Huh?
You should have your mind scrubbed out with soap and water.
But gee, what did I do, Mom?
Oh, don't try to look so innocent. I got that thought you just transferred in my direction.
Oh, gosh, Marilla, I wasn't even thinking.
Hmm.
I was just lying here trying to scratch my left ear with my right foot.
Well, it wasn't you, it was the mayor thinking. And anyone who casts such thoughts behind a person's back...
Look, you weren't tuned in on my station because my mind was a perfect blank.
Well, somebody thought it.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing you and Roscoe are the only ones in the room...
Well,
and
this is goldfish, Marilli.
Ah, sure, you can't eliminate that Tiffany sardine, you know.
And I guess fish can send out pretty strong thought waves, seeing as they're supposed to be brain food.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I suppose it could have been Mr. Weissmuller. He sort of had his scales up because I cut down on his fish food. Last week, swimming through his castle, he got stuck twice.
Jolly, instead of trying to get him thin, I should think it'd be easier to get him a bigger castle.
Mm-hmm. Well, in case you don't know it, Roscoe, there's a post-war fish castle shortage, you know. The price of even small two-entrance grottos has rocketed sky-high, and any goldfish lucky enough to have any kind of a castle, no matter how inconvenient, had better hang on to it.
He looks sort of lonesome, swimming around in the fishbowl all by himself.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever happened to Mrs. Weissmuller? Did Mr. Weissmuller eat her?
No, they were just temperamentally mismated.
Uh-huh.
So I took her back to the five-and-dime store.
What does he do? Eat seaweed in bed?
No. And Mrs. Weissmuller likes to swim clockwise, and Mr. Weissmuller wanted to swim counterclockwise. It was just smash, bang, splash every minute of the day, you know. Got me so nervous. Roscoe?
Yeah, Molly?
Will you please take your foot down from behind your neck and see who that is at the door?
Oh, sure, Molly. I was just trying to see what I'd look like if I was a monkey.
Oh, my.
I bet you if I could get both feet up, I'd look pretty good.
Oh, monkey. Mercy my stars. I don't know where he gets such crazy ideas.
There's nothing crazy about him at all. Just normal conversation for a boy of his age.
Yes, well, I don't know, Mayor. I sometimes think we should never have let him take Spanish.
What in thunder's Spanish got to do with it?
Well, goodness knows what he's been putting in his head, you know. If they're going to teach foreign languages, they should teach them in English so the parents can understand them.
Yeah, they're both right there in the study, Dr. Kate.
Thank you, Butch. Hello, Mayor. Good evening, Marilla.
Oh, why, Dr. Kate.
Oh, Doc, we didn't send for you, but you can sit down if you won't send a bill for your time.
Well, I won't. This is a personal call.
Well, go take the doctor's hat and coat.
Please. I'm out drumming up trade so I can pay my income
tax.
Take
his bag, too.
Could I... Could I interest any of you in an expensive disease or a nice, luxurious operation?
No, sir. No. You couldn't because I haven't anything to spare. I'm giving the Bureau of Internal Revenue one tonsil and my appendix and my own tax return.
Oh, Mayor.
Dr. Case.
Yes, Butch?
Can I borrow your stethoscope?
Oh, sure. It's right there in my bag. Help yourself.
Oh, gee, thanks. I always wanted to see how it won't work.
Now, you be careful, Roscoe.
I'll bring it right back. I'm going to put it on Sweet Alice and find out how she ticks.
Delicate instruments like Sweet Alice.
Here, kitty. Come here, kitty. Come here, kitty.
Stop. Go down. You come right back here. I won't have you looking through my hat.
Don't let it bother you. Yeah. It goes on all the time. This is one of our quieter evenings.
Well, I always did like three-ring circuses. Say, what happened to your feet? Did you parboil them?
Nope. No, these are my new red slippers that Marilla gave me for Christmas.
Oh, Lord. I could stand up in a corner and go to sleep. I don't know why I feel so done in.
Well... Everybody else is in the same condition. You've got a post-Christmas mental hangover.
Well, maybe so.
I have it every year myself. Sometimes it takes me the whole month of January to snap out of it.
I wonder why it is that the minute New Year's is over, everything seems too dull and flat and uninteresting.
Well, the main reason for it is that the town looks that way. Now, put that other piece of wood on the fire, will you, please?
Oh, sure.
For the whole month of December, the street lamps have been decorated with evergreen and colored lights strung along the whole length of Main Street, and holly wreaths and holly berries in every window in Springdale.
There, that ought to burn a while.
And then, right after the holidays, lights and evergreen and holly disappear, and the town looks as bare as the picked carcass of a Christmas turkey.
I guess that's it, Mayor. I know I miss our Christmas tree. My living room seems sort of empty and unfinished without it.
Yes, and it's those discarded trees that bother me the most.
Oh, how so?
Well, I hang around for weeks and months afterwards. I meet them in alleys and on vacant lots, leaning against back fences, piled on top of ashes and rubbish on their way to the city dump.
Ghosts of Christmas past.
Yes, that's right. Every one of them with a bit of tinsel, a red ribbon, or cotton snow hanging to them, like the last rag and tatter of Christmas.
Well, still, what can you do with them?
I don't know. Only it seems to me that anything that brings so much happiness deserves a better fate.
Oh, okay, Merle. But if I get bed sores, it'll be your fault. Oh, here you are, Dr. Case. I brought back your stethoscope.
Oh, just drop there in my bag, Butch.
Oh, for borrowing it, I got to go to bed. Huh. Ain't life terrible? Well, good night, Mayor.
Good night, Butch. Good night.
Good night, Dr. Case.
Good night.
Oh, bed. Always being stuck in bed. Might just as well have been born an oyster.
Nice boy.
Yeah, Butch's all right.
Well, I guess I'd better collect my pills and powders and travel along home. It's been a long day.
Did you just come from a case?
Mm-hmm. Oak Street. Little girl.
Serious?
Polio.
Ooh. Lord almighty.
7, her last birthday.
Can you do anything?
Well, I'm hoping.
What's her name?
Patty Burton. She was doing pretty good. And they sent for me tonight. She'd been crying the whole day.
Did you find out the reason?
Christmas tree.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they had one for Patty. It's been right by her bed for almost a month.
Mm-hmm.
Well, after that long a time, it lost most of its needles. Looked pretty scraggly.
Yeah, sure.
So they took it down last night. Then they put it out in the yard where Patty could still see it. But she cried all day.
What are you going to do about it?
I don't know. In that little black bag, I've got pills that'll put you to sleep, relieve your pain, lower your fever, aid your digestion, or kill your germs. But you know something, Mayor? I haven't got one darn remedy that'll mend a kid's broken heart. Well, thanks for the fire and the conversation. I've got to go home.
Well, I'll see you to the door, Doc.
Say goodbye to Morelli for me.
I'll do that. And you and the missus reserve a night to come over to supper.
Ah, we'll make it on a Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
That's the day for Mrs. Stevens' baby, but I think she'll wait till Saturday to take advantage of the Friday markdown sale at the Bon Ton. Well, good night, man.
Good night, Doc. Good night.
Well, it's clouding over. We may have some more snow by morning.
Wouldn't surprise me at all. Good night, Doc. Good night.
Case just went out, Mayor.
Yeah, it was, Merle. He said to tell you good night. He and his wife may be over for supper Thursday.
Oh, I'll have stewed chicken.
Yeah. Hey, what's the name of that song you're humming?
Well, don't you remember? We used to sing it in school. Oh, Tannenbaum.
Yes, sure. German song. It means Christmas tree.
Well, we used to sing it in English.
Yeah.
Wait, I'll pick it out for you on the piano.
Oh, Tannenbaum, wie grünsch in deine Blätter. Jordan. Hello, Bill. Well, this is the mayor. Say, look, as a special favor, would it be possible to get a 2-column box in tomorrow morning's paper? Oh, fine. I'll dictate what I want, and the heading will be to the people of Springdale who like Christmas trees.
Well, it's now the next evening, and all day long, the roads and paths that wind to the top of Blueberry Hill have resembled the climax of Shakespeare's Macbeth when Birnam Wood came to Dunsinane. But the forest that marched today on Blueberry Hill by car, by truck, by arm, and by shoulder has been nothing but Christmas trees. Old Christmas trees with bare, scraggly branches, but each one bearing a scrap of tinsel, a tatter of ribbon, or a bit of cotton snow. And what started this march to Blueberry Hill? Nothing very much. Nothing of any global or even continental consequence. Unless you're one of those 9 people in 10 who are more or less sentimental. Just a small girl's tears and the mayor's announcement in the Springdale Morning Chronicle.
Hey, Mame, just listen to this. To the people of Springdale who like Christmas trees, and especially to those who remember their own childhood and how they cried when their tree was stripped of its holiday glory and put with the trash in the alley. You know, I used to do that, Mame. Yes, sir, I remember when I was about... Say, what'd you do with our tree, Mame? Is that it lying out there by the back fence?
You see, Patty Burton is 7 years old and a very sick little girl. She's been crying over the loss of her Christmas tree. With your help, I hope to make her a wonderful tree that will last her until next Christmas. Steve, will you get our tree from the alley and put it in the car? I'm taking it out to Blueberry Hill.
All right, boys, take off your coats and start piling the trees fast as folks bring them up. Stack them on top of each other, 100 trees to a layer. Lay them and heap them together into a pyramid. Now build it careful, like the mayor said, into a big Christmas tree. By glory, when we get it done and we set it afire, we'll have a burning, blazing Christmas tree that Patty Burton could see if she's 60 miles away in Capital City.
Patty, now. Look at me.
Maybe if I talk to her, Mary.
All right, Curly, all right.
Yeah. She won't stop crying to even hear what you say.
Patty, just listen to me a minute, will you? I know why you're crying. Oh, I certainly do. I like Christmas trees, too, you know.
You do?
Sure I do. Sure, why, I've had one myself every year. Every year since the Christmas when I was even smaller than you were.
Mm-hmm. And so did I, Patty. Why, Christmas wouldn't seem like Christmas without a tree, you know?
Mine was right here by my bed.
Yeah, you know, that's just where I'd have put it.
And it had just lots and lots of ornaments.
I'll bet it was the prettiest tree in Springdale.
And way up on top, there was a star.
I know just what you mean. Star so high, it almost touched the ceiling.
Way up there it was.
No. Why, that's twice as tall as Merle is.
And every night we lit the lights.
All of them?
Red and yellow and green and white.
Oh, I wish I could have seen that.
Oh, it was just wonderful.
I can believe it.
Just wonderful.
Yes, sir. That's the only word for it.
But yesterday they took it down.
Yes, Patty, but don't you see?
They said it was dead, and they put it out in the yard.
But after a whole night.
But it wasn't dead, Mayor. It wasn't dead. It was beautiful.
I know it was. I know. And then today, look, Patty, a man came.
And he took it away.
Now, Patty, don't do that.
He took it away in a car.
Oh, Patty, please.
He took it away. And now I'll never, never see my Christmas tree again.
Oh, Patty.
But why did he take it?
Well, not that. I am going to be truthful with you, Patty. He took it away because I asked him to.
But you
see, each kind of tree, like all kinds of people, was created for a special purpose. Now, there's fruit trees, like cherry trees, and apple and peach trees, and plum, and the nut trees, like walnut and chestnut and butternut. And every year, season after season, each one of these trees loads its branches for us to harvest.
Well, yes, but...
But now. A Christmas tree, mind you. A Christmas tree is an extra special kind of tree. You know why?
Why?
Because it only bears once in its whole life. And its one and only crop is the rarest and most priceless fruit of all. People call it happiness.
Mm-hmm. Christmas time happiness.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. Christmas time happiness, because it's a very delicate fruit. No matter how hard you try or cry, it won't last beyond the holiday.
But my tree.
You know where your tree is right now?
No.
It's up on the top of Blueberry Hill.
But why?
Well, because I wanted to find out if there was any truth in an old legend. My father told it to me, and his father told it to him.
What legend, Mayor?
As near as I can remember, it goes like this. If you take your Christmas tree to the top of the tallest hill, and in our case, that's Blueberry Hill, on the fifth night before the first full moon after Christmas, which is tonight, and if that tree was loved and someone had harvested its whole wonderful crop of happiness, well, then it'll burst into flame and burn so tall and bright it'll almost blind you. And wherever the wind drops the smallest ash, a young Christmas tree will start to grow for some future Christmas.
Well, well, you know I never heard that before. Hmm. Blueberry Hill's right up there, isn't it?
Yep, yes, you could look right out this window here and see it if it wasn't so dark.
I don't see anything burning, do you?
No, no, no. Well, you can't trust these old legends, you know. Probably nothing in it at all.
But I did love my tree.
Oh, sure, sure, sure.
I loved it more than anything I ever had.
I know you did.
I loved it just terrible. I loved it just... Mayor!
Huh?
Look up on the hill! It's burning! It's burning, Mayor!
My glory, it really is.
Why, it's lighting up the whole of Blueberry Hill by the day.
Oh, what? It's burning! It's burning because I love you!
The tallest, brightest tree that anyone ever saw.
Oh, Mom. goodbye, Christmas tree. And next year, maybe I'll have one of your children.
I guess I ought to be thinking about getting to bed.
Yep, yes. Ooh. Getting late.
It's been kind of a hard day.
That's right.
Nice day, though.
Wonderful.
Mm. Little girl seemed terrible happy.
I think she was, Merle.
Mm-hmm. All those trees certainly did make a blaze, didn't they?
That's right.
Uh-huh. There's only one thing that kind of bothers me, though.
Yeah, what's that?
Well, I've always kind of prided myself on my memory, you know.
Yeah, sure.
Once I hear a thing, I very seldom forget it.
Yeah, that's right.
And I've been trying to think and trying to think.
Oh, I wouldn't do that.
The truth be known, I've been racking my brain.
That's dangerous.
And for the life of me, I can't even remember hearing anybody tell that legend you told Patty.
Well, I never heard it either.
You mean you just made it up?
Well, legends have to start sometime, don't they? Who knows, a couple of hundred years from now, it may be a real legend.
Yes, but it couldn't be.
Why couldn't it?
Well,
anyway, I'm planning to make the burning of Christmas trees an annual affair in Springdale.
Well,
it sort of finishes up the holidays with a nice feeling.
Uh-huh. Well, I guess it does. Yeah. It's a lot better than having them hanging around for months and months and months and wondering what to do with them.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes, it is. Well, I guess I'll go along up to my room.
Good night, Merle.
Sweet Alice is out, and if you'll let her in before you go upstairs, I'd appreciate it.
I'll do that.
And this is the night to wind the clock, you know.
I won't forget it.
That wood in the fireplace sometimes...
I'll put up the fire screen.
Damper on the fire.
I'll put it down.
Well...
Good night, Merle.
Good night. Oh, I almost forgot.
I'll lock the front door, too.
No, that's not what I was going to say. I was going to tell you I made some donuts this morning.
Yeah?
Uh-huh. There's two on a plate with a glass of milk. They're right there on the piano.
Oh, well,
You better eat them. You better eat them right now so you won't go right to bed and have indigestion.
Okay, sure. Thank you.
Well, good night, Ray.
Good night again, Merle. Good night.
I hope Roscoe's remembered what I told him and not left the bathroom door open. When he does, it gets so cold in there, you don't have to brush your teeth. You just hold the toothbrush against them and shiver again. Oh, my stars, these stairs are going to be the death of me someday. Oh,
my. Wonderful day. Wonderful donuts, too. That's a wonderful old world.
No, Mayor. When I saw Patty lying there, it almost made me cry. Yes, it's apt to be so long and so hopeless, you know.
Oh, it isn't hopeless anymore, Marilla.
What do you mean?
Well, just this, that if everyone in Springdale, in every place in the country, will support the March of Dimes with their contribution, no matter how small, they'll light a flame of hope as bright as that fire on Blueberry Hill.
Well, I know it's a wonderful thing, of course, Mayor, but how does the March of Dimes work?
Well, the National Foundation for Infantile Paralysis uses half of the money right in the community in which it was raised. And guarantees hospital care to all polio victims. And the other half used for research and prevention and cure of polio.
Oh, isn't that wonderful? Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah, I think it is.
Mayor, do you know where the hammer is?
Why, sure, of course. Why?
I'm going to break my piggy bank for the March of Dimes.
Be sure to be with us next week at the same time when the makers of Noxzema again present the mayor of the town in a chapter called I Dreamt I Dwelt in Marble Halls.
The Mayor of the Town, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 21st of January, 1948 on ABC. And that does it for this hour of Christmas shows on Tuned to Yesterday. Be with us again for more programs from holidays past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVonier. Happy holidays.